believe that someday we're gonna find our way. And I believe in a beautiful day.
Okay, here we are. Hey, Steph.
Oh my God, I'm gonna cry.
And now I can cuss. I'm just kidding.
I mean, that John doesn't give a rat's ass if we're
no, he doesn't care.
You know, he is the real deal.
Yeah.
That's what I have always wanted in religion, because, you know, I like it. I love it for the fellowship. I love it for the feeling of, you know, having something to believe in, whether it's just my, you know, fellow people.
Yeah.
And he kind of, for me, that's what I've always wanted. And that's what I kind of try to articulate to my kids. It's like, it's just a matter of being decent in everything that you do and taking a beat and thinking, am I doing the next right thing here? Am I being my best self? Am I giving my best to this person with whom I'm interacting right now? You know, and believe me, I'm an apologizer on a regular basis, because even though I try, it doesn't always work out that way. But God, John just really embodies that, everything I want out of faith and spirituality and religion and all that jazz. Anyway, what a beautiful person, you know?
Yeah, he really is. And you know, I have to say, and I didn't say this on the main show, but I remember when I mentioned that I had gone to church with my Catholic grandmother during the summer that I lived with her. And I distinctly remember I was like 9 years old, and we had, we went to this different church, and I, you know, we were on the other side of town. And so instead of going to my grandmother's regular church, we attended a different one. And so there was a substitute, priest who was handling everything. And I guess the guy who was usually there was sick. So the substitute priest, and I don't know if there's like a religious word for that, but the substitute priest told everybody that if we didn't pray for the sick priest to get better, we were all going to go to hell. And I was like, what? And I remember we left the church, and I asked my grandmother about that. And I'm like, I don't even remember what I asked, but I did mention it to her. And I remember her face, because she was like upset. She didn't like that he said that. And she just said, it's not true. It's not true. And right. And I don't remember us having a long conversation about that. But I always remembered. I thought, that's wrong.
Yeah.
You know, that's just wrong. I mean, it wasn't like I had, you know, because there was another thing that I remember very well. And at every service, there would be singing, and the song Rock My Soul in the Bosom of Abraham. I was literally standing on like the, what are they called?
Pews.
And rocking out.
Yeah.
I mean, I was rocking out to that song. My grandmother had such a giggle and loved the fact that I was rocking out, but I was having a lot of fun. I mean, I certainly can't say that I had negative experiences at church. I had that one experience where that priest was weird, but, you know, and I mean, I have had experiences where, like I said, my girlfriend, who is a born-again Christian, would laugh when I'd say, I know you think I'm going to hell. But, you know, she never said, you're going to hell. You know, and even if she did, I would be like, well, fine.
You'd be like, whatever. You look like shit, too. No.
Yeah, it was funny, because one time I came into work, and she worked at a fragrance. She was like the manager at a fragrance department, women's fragrance at Macy's. And I actually didn't work there anymore, but I was working as an outside sales rep. And I came in one day to say hi to her. And that was the first thing she said. She's like, you look like shit. Like, gee, thanks. But I knew I did. She was right. I did. Mm-hmm. But I loved the fact that she could just, the only thing that I, you know, one of the things that I didn't agree with her on was like, she didn't want her kids reading Harry Potter because she thought it was evil. And
I just thought,
well, that's your kids. It's not mine. You get to parent the way you want.
Yep.
So that's, I didn't tell her she was wrong to think that way. I just thought that was kind of malarkey. That, you know,
my 13-year-old has seen, he's caught up on Game of Thrones. So how does she feel about that? It depends on the person.
Yeah.
But, you know, I am... After talking to John, I feel more hopeful because, you know, Like when he, what really resonated with me was, yeah, we're all beat to shit. Mm-hmm. We are all, we are tapped out. We're wounded. We're exhausted. You know, I mean, when that, like you talking about healthcare, and I'm thinking about myself at 6 o'clock in the morning, calling 5 senators, you know, from mm-hmm. the freaking toilet. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, sorry. I mean, there's a visual for you, but that's the reality. That's dire stuff.
Right.
That's dire stuff. And I don't have a lot of free time in my day, but you better believe I'm going to make time
right.
to do the things that are important to me. And something that's, you know, and so, you know, maybe that might have been a morning when you hadn't either opened your eyes yet or you were feeling particularly down about it.
Yeah.
We got to have each other's backs. And I kind of think that's going to be my new message. That's my fuel right now.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, there are enough of us. And we know there are a minimum of 3 million more of us
right.
than there are on the other side.
Yes.
And with Donnie's approval rating being as low as it's ever been right now, mm-hmm. that we know there are even more.
Well, and
who are,
you know what?
Who are feeling the way we do.
You're absolutely right. And what I have to say, I have two things to say. Number one, I think it's going to become increasingly difficult to do that because online we're going to see Russian interference and we're going to see disinformation and they're going to play on our, you know, already divided culture. And so that's
right.
going to be hard to have mm-hmm. each other's backs because there's going to be a lot of fighting. And I've noticed that there already is, you know, I mean, I don't want to forget my other point, which is I want to briefly talk about the NFL, but I have noticed, and I posted about this on my Facebook page the other day that, on Sunday, two different men used the same tactic to try to undermine my confidence by basically giving me compliments first. And then one of them only said that I was rude. He's done this before. He was on my Facebook page for quite a long time. And he likes to just pop in from time to time and mm-hmm. comment on my post that I'm a pretty liberal, but I'm rude. So the first
he calls you pretty.
He says, yes, you're. He'll say, God, hey, pretty thanks. Liberal. I disagree with you. I think you're rude. But we agree on Trump. And that's kind of like his innocent. He types it almost like with his innocent voice. And so I made a comment back to him and I said, yes, I know you think I'm rude. You've mentioned that before. And mm-hmm. then, you know, it was this back and forth. And it was such a backhanded compliment. And it was such a patriarchal, misogynistic bullshit thing to do. It was like, well, I like you, but I don't like how you're conducting yourself. You're pretty, so it's okay. And I'll still follow you. But
yes.
I don't like what you're saying. And then another man.
So you know, Kimberly, I think you're still fuckable.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Like, I give a shit what that guy thinks.
Exactly.
And then, you know, I mean, I made a point on my Facebook page, when men disagree with each other, do they ever go on each other's posts and say, well, you're really handsome, but I think you're rude? No, mm-hmm. they only do that to women. It's a tactic right. because yeah. women in our society are basically taught that our looks are our value. And so, you know, if we're good looking, then it's okay. And men understand that they can use that as a weapon to try to undermine our confidence. And then another man that same day, you know, I am on the after party on Bob Seska's podcast every Friday. And so there was a gentleman who, I guess, initially emailed Bob privately and told him that he didn't like me and that he didn't like my voice and whatever else. And then Bob let him know that we're a couple, which quieted him for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And then so the reason I'm on his after party is because his partner, Chez, passed away earlier this year in February. And mm-hmm. since then, he's been kind of like, you know, trying to figure out where the direction of the show is. And so he has different guests or co-hosts, I should say, helping him out, whether, you know, he has the free shows on Tuesday and Thursday, and then he has the after party, which I'm always on the after party, but then, you know, Tuesdays and Thursdays, it's a number of people. And then if they can't make it, I will fill in. So this guy came on and he had something complimentary to say about me, saying that he likes me on the Tuesdays and Thursday shows, which I'm really not on very often. But then he told Bob that he should consider another guest for the after party, and he bagged on my voice. And he also referred to me as a Buick in the garage, which I've heard several different people have said to me what they think that means. I don't know what it means. All I know is it was not a friendly compliment. it was some kind of a derogatory statement. And he also said that the other females that he knows don't like me because I'm either not feminist enough or I'm too feminist. And it's like, yeah, give me a break. How many females are you sitting around listening to the Bob Seska after party with discussing me? I'm sure not many. This guy females. Is like a, I don't know, 60-year-old dude who obviously knows better than everybody. But it really pissed me off because I'm starting to see this and, you know, going back to this Trump effect, more and more liberal, progressive men are taking on a misogynistic tone and they don't even realize it. It's just like by telling me they think I'm pretty or I like Kimberly and all, but, and then they all, and they cut me down. And then, so it's not to say that this didn't exist prior to Trump. It did. But I think what's happening is it's like this residue that's kind of coming off of the extreme misogynist and the extreme, sexists and the liberal men who are sexist without realizing it. And they are, not all of them obviously, but a good number. They are, I don't even know if they realize this, but more emboldened to treat women as if they're lesser than.
Of course.
And it's like, it's making me so angry. And so it's like you're saying, you know, like having, you know, I want to have your back. And I mean, obviously that's the main thing and we have to do that for each other, but it concerns me because I know that we're going to be seeing so much more discourse, so much more arguing and I don't know, just negativity online, yeah. You know, I mean, and some of it's going to be from legitimate people. Like these guys were legitimate. They weren't bots. They weren't Russian trolls or anything. They've been on, you know, this one guy was been on my Facebook page for years. So I don't think he's a Russian troll. I just think right. that he is, an asshole.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The one who said that I was pretty but rude. And then the other one listening to Bob, it, you know, I mean, I could see his Facebook page and I don't know how long he's been listening to Bob's show, but, you know, he's not a Russian he's not a Russian troll. It's like right. a legitimate guy in this country who is just being a dick, just yeah. being a misogynistic dick.
Yeah. I mean, that I'm so, so I hate it when appearance is brought into it, because that makes me even more angry. And so now what I think is when someone does that, that's confirmation that if you thought you shouldn't respond to them or give them the time of day, that's confirmation that you absolutely should not.
Right.
Because it's not going to go anywhere beyond that. Cause that's there. It's all like, you know, the little heads doing the thinking, or they just don't have the capacity to get beyond that.
Yeah.
And I don't want to talk to somebody like that. You know, as a woman, at my age, you know, I don't want to think if I'm worried about my looks, my worries are going to get a lot fucking worse because I'm getting older.
Right. Exactly.
And so if I'm hanging my hat on being cute, I got problems.
Yeah.
I got worse problems than the guys who are concerned with whether or not I'm cute have. Okay.
Yeah.
And so I, you know, I live in a very liberal area, as you know, Oakland. I jog through my neighborhood and I run on the Berkeley campus 3 times a week. And on Saturday, there was a big game, Cal and USC, huge game on the Cal campus. And I'm running with my balls to the wall feminist running partner. Okay. And here we come through campus and there's drunkenness and just, you know, slovenly, and it's 11 in the, you know, 10 in the morning, not even. And I'm looking at all these young women, students from both USC and Cal in their booty shorts with like all but like a labia hanging out of the shorts. Okay. Cheerleading skirts and tube tops.
Yeah.
For the most part, I would say the majority of the young women students from both schools, that was what they were wearing. And I was shaking my head and I'm like, I'm telling my friend Star, her name is Star. I'm like, Star, what the fuck? Like, do these people not have any ounce of feminist pride? Do they not understand what what pushing the sisterhood's agenda forward means?
Yeah.
Like, they're not doing that. These are 20-year-old women who want to objectify themselves and wear tube tops. And they had 4.2 GPAs in high school.
Yeah.
Like, what are they thinking?
I know. Well, it's interesting that you say that, though, because as an admin on many feminist pages, there was actually a discussion about something like this. And there's kind of like two camps, I guess. There's your camp, which I'm on. And then there's the idea that, and I've seen this before in different variations, but like the idea is women should be able to wear whatever they want without somebody slut shaming them or, you know, criticizing them. And I agree, except for the fact that what you just said is they are objectifying themselves for the sole purpose of, and I don't know that this is ever going to change, because this is how young girls are. I mean, when you're young and you discover your sexuality and you discover the power you have with your sexuality, many of us feel, I mean, I didn't wear the short skirts per se, but I was wearing, and it was because I wasn't fond of my legs, but I still wore short skirts at times. But I mean, I wore tube tops with no bra.
Oh my God. I lived in them in high school. But
yeah.
The point is, it was a different thing.
Because like you said, they're objectifying themselves.
Right. I wore a purple and white tube top with a pair of purple gauchos. Okay. It was not to objectify. It's because it was cute.
Right.
I want these girls to give themselves more credit.
That's how I feel.
I think that being sexy is right on. And if I can make myself feel like, if I put something on, sexy looks sexy in a velvet blazer.
Right.
It doesn't, you know, I mean, it doesn't mean I'm showing off my body parts. Leave a little to the freaking imagination.
Yeah.
I am sorry.
I agree.
I believe that sexy comes in a variety of different forms.
And that's just like, I mean, I saw a while back some of this discussion on some of the feminist pages about, you know, young girls doing this, because so many times you see these young teenagers who are taking provocative looking pictures of themselves in their bathroom where, you know, they're wearing like a white t-shirt with no bra and you can see everything. And, you know, and so the argument from feminists is that, well, they should be able to do that without feeling any kind of shame. And it's like, okay, yes, but that's not how the way that our culture is set up. And what they're taught and what is making them want to do that is, as you said earlier, always goes back to making yourself, objectifying yourself and looking for praise from somebody else to make yourself feel valuable, as opposed to feeling valuable and not needing that, needing that reassurance from the opposite sex or from the sex that you're attracted to. Granted, this wasn't necessarily happening in the 1950s, because obviously the whole Puritan thing was really hardcore then. But I mean, when you're a young girl and you are discovering your sexuality and you're discovering the fact that there's actually power. I mean, I remember the first time I was 13 years old. And even though I was still wearing very thick glasses, I had lost a whole bunch of weight and I was starting to get boobs, which I really didn't want, but I was getting them. I was like such a prude. Everything scared me. I hated it. I didn't want my period. I didn't want boobs, but I was getting it. And I started noticing that I was getting attention from grown men and my my mother and I went to this man's house with a girlfriend of hers. So it was all of us there. And this man was an older man and he was really handsome. And he wasn't looking at me in a gross way, but you know, he was kind of checking me out a little bit, but not in a way that made me or my mother feel uncomfortable. But I don't know how to describe it. He wasn't being a pig, but I kind of got from him that he thought I was a pretty girl. And I mean, I was like 5'8". Even though I was 13, I looked a little older, and I just remember I felt so empowered by that. I was like, wow, a man likes me, you know, and that's, I think that's how a lot of young women feel. You know, I mean, I brought up Madison earlier and she's 16, and it's like, I look at, she got crap for wearing makeup when she was 12, 13 years old. And I mean, I remember when I wore makeup when I was a teenager, my father would give me crap for it. My mother just let me do it because my mother realized, you know what, she's going to do it whether I tell her she can. She'll just go to school and put it on, or, you know, as soon as I'm out of view, she'll put it on. And I wore ridiculous amounts of makeup. I wore lots of black eyeliner and, you know, and I thought I was so cool and everything. But that's what you do when you're young.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You do. You. But I agree with you. I mean, going back to this whole thing when you're like watching these young girls, it's kind of sad because it's like, no, your value is not about whether or not you're sexually attractive to a man. It's so much more than that.
Well, after bitching for like a good solid mile and a half, we came to a corner and the crowd started to thin out. And there was a woman, Cal student. She had on a cute navy blue Cal tank top with like a cute little jog bra, sort of visible, you know, that look. She had on some cute cropped black leggings and like just her hair was cute, you know, like a cute little sassy ponytail. And I looked at her and I was like, now that she looks to me, she's got her self-confidence intact. She looks super cute. I mean, the clothes were tight. The clothes are tight these days. So what? But it was just to me like very attractive.
Uh-huh.
In a way where she was maintaining her dignity.
Right.
I felt like these girls that were falling out of their clothes and they were drunk. I just don't like that. I don't like that combination.
Yeah, me neither.
Because I know it all too well. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I've been there. Anyhow, enough. Kids these days, I swear.
Kids these days, I know how. Well, right before we go, I just want to kind of touch on this whole thing that's happening with the NFL, and just to say
to say that
I think that Trump is messing with the wrong crowd now. I think this is a big mistake for him.
Correct.
At least I hope so.
Well, yeah. I mean, first of all, I've been following this story since Cap took a knee. You know, I mean, that's our home team, and I'm looking at this guy who half black, half white, adopted, raised by white people in the Midwest, an outstanding student, a very articulate man, a guy who made a lot of money and is quite a talented athlete, who believes that racial inequity is not something he's going to sit quiet for.
Mm-hmm.
And he took a knee. That's what this is about.
Yeah.
There ain't nothing else to discuss. And Donald Trump, you are a thin-skinned moron if you believe you're going to pass your agenda off on the American public. Sure, your Confederate flag-waving base is on board with it, and they love you for it. But guess what? The rest of the country sees it for what it's worth.
Yeah.
And we want equality. It's what our country was founded upon. And so shut your mouth. Shut your mouth. You're going to lose. You sued the NFL when you're failing New Jersey Generals, you know, couldn't deliver. And they paid you $3. You got a bone to pick. You're a tool and we all know it. You're going to lose. This is it. He hasn't passed one single bit of legislation in almost a year.
Yeah.
Okay. They lose every time they try to repeal and replace Obamacare. They lose because the resistance, because regular people aren't standing for it,
mm-hmm.
because we are calling, because our parents are calling, because people deserve health care. That's it. People deserve to be able to speak freely and to protest peacefully. You can't take now you're fucking with the Constitution.
Yeah.
Okay. And sorry, we ain't going for it.
Don't mess with our Constitution.
Yeah. And by the way, did you guys not love my "not a single person"? I didn't hear Bob cackle in the background for that. I was like, I've been working on that for weeks.
He's cackling now.
Well, I envision you guys, because I do it for my husband every time, and he laughs every time because it's fucking funny. But I sometimes imagine you two sitting on your new couch, and I say to myself, do they think not a single person is hilarious? Are they imitating it to one another? Or is that just me and my weirdness with my audience of one laughing? Anyway.
Well, we certainly do like to amuse ourselves too.
All right, well, thank you for allowing me to believe that I amuse you as well. It's always a pleasure.
You do. With you.
It's always a pleasure.
And I didn't get to say this on the free show, so I guess I'll have to just kind of announce it. Next month, I am going back east to look for places to live. So we're only going to do one show.
Well, okay then.
Instead of two. So
you're telling me I can take a 3-week vacation?
You can.
Okay.
And then we'll just have to discuss which day we're going to do our free show, which we always, you know, we don't know in advance. We just do it when we can. So, but yeah, so there's only going to be one. I'm going to be leaving at the end of October. So,
oh my gosh, we're going to be back east at the same time.
Oh, wow. Cool.
You know, I'm going, my family, we're going to Virginia, and then we're doing, we're taking the rental car back to DC and taking the train up to New York. And then I'm taking my son to see Colbert live.
Oh,
on
how fun. That's going to be so much
Halloween
fun.
Night.
Oh, that's really going to be cool.
I'll report back.
Yes.
We'll reconvene and we'll have much to report.
Yes. All right. Well, it was great. It was great talking to you as always. And,
always.
Thanks. Thank you.
Power to the people.
Power to the people. All right. Thank you, everybody.